Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin. On two previous occasions on this podcast, we had the opportunity to talk about the relationship of music to religion. First with Robert Coote, who documented the most popular American hymns of the past two centuries, and then with Jim Hauser on the contemporary Christian music scene. It is almost a given that most Christian churches, and indeed other faith traditions as well, include some form of music in their weekly service, be it traditional hymns accompanied by a pipe organ, a choir belting out down-home Southern gospel, or contemporary Christian music with electric guitars. And with the Christmas season upon us, we certainly become aware of the importance music plays during the holiday season, as it seems that virtually every established musician has recorded a Christmas album, including Barbra Streisand. Most churches maintain someone to coordinate the musical aspect of worship, be a paid staff member or a group of volunteers. And it's not surprising that these musical ministries are the birthing ground for a number of artists who go on to have successful careers in the music world. How often do we hear interviews with a star like Carrie Underwood where it is revealed that the artist got her passion for music and perfected her talents in a church choir? With that said, I thought it'd be interesting to see what it takes to run that portion of a church, the musical ministry. I was further prompted to explore this idea while sitting in our weekly service the past couple weeks, listening to our church ensemble and wondering what the music pastor does on a weekly basis. I know that he plays guitars and sings, but is that all there is to it? And to that effect, I have invited Ryan Habig, the music pastor of Redemption Church in Duval, Washington, to sit down and talk with us. And as a very special treat, I've convinced him to play us one of his own compositions at the end of the interview, so stay tuned for that. And no cheating by fast-forwarding to the song either, because I guarantee you that our interview will be interesting, as are all our other archived episodes that we invite you to check out on our website. And so, with no further ado, I say, Ryan, welcome to Research on Religion.
Thanks, Tony.
Now, before going on, I have to give full disclosure here that I am a member of Redemption Church in Duval. Actually, I'm not a member yet because we're just pretty new, so we haven't had any official members yet. But I am a congregant in Redemption Church in Duval, and that I recently followed Ryan from his previous church to this new startup church. Now, you can get an idea about that startup in an earlier podcast that we did with Matt Boswell on the first week of starting up this new church. It's a fast-paced and zany exploration of what to do if you don't have anything and you want to host a couple hundred people within a 6 or 7 day time period. We'll link to that podcast as well, as well as our other musical ones. So again, please do visit us on our website and tell your friends about us. So Ryan, when we often think about church, we tend to think about the lead pastor giving a sermon. And that is probably the most common image generated in people's minds. But as I noted in the intro, music is really, really important to a worship service. So let me begin by asking a broad question as to why you think music plays such a central role in worship.
Sure. The sermon is definitely kind of the centerpiece of the service. But if you look biblically as well as just historically, you'll see that there's always been kind of this shared relationship between the word or the giving of the teaching and then the chance for the people to respond or engage in some way. And so music really has a big part in that. I mean, you look all through the Old Testament and a big part of the instructions given for the just the practices and rituals related to the tabernacle, the temple, and all that had to do with music. And there were musicians that were commissioned to lead those kinds of things, the choirs and the different instruments and all that kind of thing. And you look through the Psalms, and music is a big part of the language of worship. that David uses there. And then even in the New Testament, you know, there's examples of the believers singing together and in their gatherings, worshiping together through music. And Paul talks several times about singing songs together, singing hymns and that kind of thing. And so it's always been biblically just part of the what we do as people of God, people of faith. Then just look through historically. I mean, church music has definitely changed in terms of how it's done, who does it, what it looks, what it sounds like. I mean, that's just kind of been a roller coaster through the centuries, you know. But it's always consistently, it's always been an important part of the church and an important part of our worship and how we respond to God.
Yeah, you make a mention of the Psalms, which I hadn't thought about before. We think about the Psalms as being in verse, but, you know, we never heard the music from back then because, well, they didn't record it. But, I mean, there's some historical evidence to the extent that that was set to music or put to music, and a lot of hymns that follow on later actually are put to music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Psalms, if you look at them, they were even, there's even melodies that are specified that this psalm was to be sung to this particular melody, and of course, we have no idea what those melodies today are.
Right.
And it's interesting, you know, there's some church traditions that the Psalms are really kind of the only acceptable texts that you should sing in a church, you know, and they limit, you know, the scope of what is sung in the churches to just the Psalms, and you know, as that's kind of their hymn book.
The other thing that you mentioned too, and this prompted earlier podcast or remembrance of an earlier podcast in my mind with Justin Barrett, when we were talking about the innate belief that we have in religion or the supernatural or of God. And he used an analogy that music is very similar in that regard. So, you know, everybody seems to like music, and everybody seems to have this innate connection to God as well. And so it just almost seems natural that music is going to be part of any type of worship service. And you see this historically in every culture and every faith tradition.
Yeah, there's definitely something very transcendent about music. You know, I think there's something about the poetry of it, the artistry of it, the creativity that's in it. Mm-hmm. It makes it easy for our spirits to connect with God in a way that's different than just saying something, you know, or just reading
right.
something, singing something. You know, just there's different emotions connected to that, and I think that's there's something spiritual in that, with that understanding and looking at that, it's like there's no surprise that God has used music throughout the ages.
I want to explore those motions a little bit later on, but now that we're talking about different styles of music, we talked about the Psalms and the melodies that was set through, and you had talked about how Christian music has changed throughout the eras, and we've talked about hymns, traditional hymns, and previously on this podcast, as well as contemporary Christian music. I got a personal question I got to ask you, and for the benefit of our listening audience, I should mention that Redemption Church is in Duval, Washington, and that's located in the Snoqualmie Valley in rural King County, just about 25 or 30 miles outside of Seattle. And it's a mix of farming, country, and suburban bedroom communities for folks who don't mind commuting to work. So you're really kind of rural out here, and given that we have horses and sheep and cows within a stone's throw of the church, why aren't we hearing more country twang in our services?
See, you know, that all just comes down to the guy picking the music, really.
the guy picking the music.
No, it's actually
you don't
funny. It's funny because I grew up in Southwest Kansas, and so you would think that would be kind of a natural
absolutely.
Thing for me. Yeah, no, but. Maybe one of these days we'll see. I'll get inspired by that cowboy hat you wear every week.
All right, you're on the hot seat for this now.
We'll bust out a banjo or something.
So.
Yeah,
yeah. And then I think some of our folks, we got folks listening up in Moose Jaw, Canada, as well as Fort McMurray. So you know, they'd love to hear the country music.
Well, I tell you, bluegrass is coming back. It's
all right.
Not going to come back. So you just might hear a banjo and who knows?
That'd be
like
great.
That one of these days.
I'm going to keep bugging you on that. If you
good.
Like a wedding singer, do you take requests and stuff like that? Well, you mentioned you started out in Kansas, or you grew up in Kansas. So let's talk about your background and how you got to where you are today. Let's go ahead and start with growing up. Did you come from a Christian background, a Christian family growing up?
I did. All my pretty blessed actually to grow up in a family where my immediate family and then pretty much all of my extended family have been Christian my whole life, and just kind of that legacy. But my dad was a pastor, and so grew up very much involved in the church and in the inner workings of the church. My mom was the music director at our church for part of the years growing up, so definitely had that exposure to the musical side of things. And my whole family has been musical, actually. But so I was very connected to that whole side of church and just kind of seeing that.
So your mom has the aspect of being, or at least the vantage point of being a musical director too, and you grew up around that. So it almost seemed that that's a natural transition for you. Is that where your interest in music came from, being there? And, you know, were you, what the Bellamy brothers would say is you got drugged to church, right? You know, I got a drug problem. I always got drugged to church. And you're there listening to mom do the work with the choir or the music. And is that where it comes from?
I would say definitely part of it, at least. I remember growing up, you know, even as a really little kid, laying in bed at night and hearing my mom practice the songs on the piano that she'd be playing for church that week. And so that was always just kind of, I had that influence. And from an early age, I was interested in learning piano and getting into music and that kind of thing. And you look at pastors' kids a lot of times, and I don't know how true it actually is, but you kind of hear the stereotype that they either kind of go one way or the other. They either stay in the church their whole life and kind of follow that track of staying involved, or they go the opposite direction and completely rebel. And yeah, so I guess yeah. I'm on the first track, I guess.
That's a good thing.
But yeah, I never really had any kind of resentment towards the church that you hear of a lot of times from pastors' kids, that kind of thing. I was always just really thankful for the example that they modeled to me, and I just always enjoyed being in the church, being involved, and I think it was just kind of one of those natural things.
And what kind of church was it? I mean, did it have a denominational affiliation? And what was the music scene like? Was it pipe organ, or, you know, was it ragtime piano, or what was it?
No, I definitely grew up and saw kind of an evolution of church music. I remember when I was little, we weren't in any denomination. It was just an independent Christian church. But we had an organ and a piano, and that was about it. And, you know, we'd sing the hymns, and then kind of the organ kind of faded away, and it moved to a little bit more. You add some guitar in with the piano, and then added some drums in, and then kind of had the band. And as the styles kind of changed, I saw that reflected in our church services. And so I really kind of saw a pretty wide spectrum, actually, from, you know, going from my earliest memories of an organ and a piano just singing the hymns right out of the hymnal to a more contemporary sound with a full-on band and singers, that kind of a thing.
Now you were watching this as you were growing up, so I don't know how much aware you were of maybe what was going on behind the scenes. Your mom was the musical director, but one of the things that we note in church a lot is that the things that create the most conflict tend to be the most trivial things, like the carpet color or, you know, why did you paint the walls this or that? And one of the big issues always comes up with music. Did your church that you grew up in have just a natural evolution? Everybody was on board, or did somebody say, that guitar, where's that guitar coming from? Oh, the devil's coming in. You know, was that the scene or what?
You know, if there was some of that, I wasn't super exposed to it. At least when I was younger, I think I've become more aware of it as I've, you know, gotten older and been involved in different churches and different things like that. But as far as I remember, I would be shocked if there wasn't any kind of a reaction or response, just because people tend to have pretty strong feelings about that kind of stuff.
Like playing country music in church.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a great example. Anytime you change something that people are used to, too, that's you're playing with people's emotions and their traditions and that kind of thing. So I'd be surprised if there wasn't any kind of that reaction, but I wasn't, like I said, super exposed to it or aware.
Now, did you get involved in the church band or choir when you were a kid, and about what age?
I started playing piano when I was 7 or 8, and I remember there would be times where I would play. We used to have called it an offertory, and it would be kind of like a special song played during the offering time. It was kind of a chance to showcase different music or whatever, so I would play piano solos occasionally for that. It was when I was in middle school that I think I really started getting into like a worship band. We had a youth band that played for a youth group and that kind of thing. So that's kind of when I started getting into that and getting into some of the more of the leading aspects of it.
Now, that's when you started playing guitar, too, because you said you started out on piano?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was around, maybe a little bit earlier than that, I started playing a little guitar, but it wasn't until I got to middle school that I actually started using it for church, for worship.
Yeah, because I mostly see you as the guitar guy, although one or two times I've seen you with the keyboard. So, now, Lynn, I got to ask you this. It's a little bit of a personal question here. You're a pretty shy and humble guy when it comes to talking to you one-on-one. In fact, trying to convince you to do this interview, you're like, well, I don't know if I have anything to say or anything. It's, no, you got a great story here. So when you think back to your childhood and then getting involved in the church band and then, you know, other youth bands, was it a big deal to get up in front of the audience the first couple times you did it? I mean, were you pretty nervous?
You know, it's funny. It kind of depends on the nature of what it is I'm doing. If it's more of a and yeah, certainly I've gotten more comfortable as I've had more experience. But I don't know that I can specifically remember those earliest days. But when I would get up to perform, you know, even like in college, you know, when I was a music major, we would have these required performances that we would all have to get up and perform our stuff. I could remember just my hands sweating and just shaking beforehand because, you know, just the nerves of performing it. I don't really see myself much as a performer, which is funny. You think, gosh, you get up in front of a couple hundred people every week. But something about getting up and leading worship feels different. Like it's not I don't know if the pressure is a little different because I realize that I'm not necessarily performing for people. I'm performing more for God, which maybe that's backwards. Maybe the pressure would be higher.
Yeah, no, that's
you know,
true.
I'm performing. But I think there's this, for whatever reason, there's this sense of, you know, I'm not doing this simply for the benefit of them watching me and the judgment that kind of comes with that, but it's rather I'm doing this really kind of as a service to help lead people into that sense of being aware of God's presence and giving them kind of that avenue to interact with Him in worship. And so I think it takes, like I said, I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off all the focus being on me. And so, yeah, I don't really get too nervous when I get up to lead worship anymore.
Yeah, that's really interesting you say that because I get to watch you from the audience side and you're behind the podium. And it's an interesting juxtaposition for me because when I go and teach, I'm in the other side of the podium watching the audience. And so a lot of what you says resonates with me is that, you know, as soon as you stop and say, well, you know, I'm going to do this for a higher purpose and not worry about whether the person in the fourth row, third seat is, you know, stressing out about the music, it does change it. Now, one of the things that I see when I see you up on stage and singing, you close your eyes sometimes. And I mean, you seem to be, I guess, lost in the experience or moving to a higher plane. What's that feeling like?
You know, that's actually funny that you mentioned that because that's something that I try to be conscious of and actually be aware of how often I do that because I think that would be kind of my default as I'm worshiping. You know, it kind of helps me focus, you know, on God and close out any distractions around. And I think that that's just kind of how I personally worship. I also, though, I realize that I'm leading others and there could be this perception of kind of a closed off feeling. You know, it's the moment I close my eyes, how does that affect the person sitting in the congregation as they're trying to be led by me and the rest of the team? Because I want to be sensitive to the fact that, like I said, I'm a leader. You know, I'm leading others. I want to draw them into the experience, and so I do try to be conscious about, and I have to because, like I said, it's kind of my default. As you know, and when I'm in this mode of, you know, I'm just worshiping God. You know, I'm just engaged and lost in the experience. It's almost like I have to keep this, just this conscious idea that I can still lose myself in the experience to a degree, but at the same time I'm also serving a function right now, and I need to be aware that I need to be engaging with others too. So I do close my eyes, but I do try to limit it at the same time too.
It's interesting you say that you know the music is part of a worship, but also you're playing a role. You're the music minister. You're the guy on stage that has to lead everybody. And we're gonna talk more about what kind of things you do during the week and what decisions you make. But a little advice from the peanut gallery. Actually, when you close your eyes, it's more inspirational. It's not to say that, he's not looking at me anymore. I can sing bad. But, when I see that from my end of the audience, I'm like, wow, Ryan's really, really into this. He's moving to a different plane. He's really worshiping strongly. And so it's okay. You can close your eyes.
Well, cool. Praise God. That's good to hear.
You talked about going to college before, and you were performing in front of audience that you were required to do this for your college education. And so let's follow your passions for music to college there. You went to Azusa Pacific in right around Pasadena, California. It's actually in the town of Azusa, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Not many people know that, but they know Pasadena. So Azusa Pacific, tell us a little bit about that. Was that just a regular college? Was it kind of a seminary experience? Was it a mix of both?
Sure. It has both. The school itself. I just did my undergrad work there, and it's a Christian liberal arts school. So they offer, I don't know how many dozens of degrees in various areas. But I majored in music, and within the music major, there's some different areas of focus. I think there's five or six, like performance or commercial music, composition theory, those kinds of things. And they actually had a church music track, and so that's the one I went down. Within that, there were besides just the typical music major stuff that all music majors are required to do, the different performing and theory, that kind of stuff. I did different classes related to just the specifics of being a music minister. So working with a pastoral staff, working with different copyright things and how to pick songs and some church history, as it related to music, hymnology, just kind of all those things specifically related to the job of music minister. And then even some of the more traditional elements that we don't even have to deal with, like how to pick out choir robes or how to select an organ, that kind of thing.
Well, very pragmatic stuff.
Who knows? Maybe one of these days it'll
you said
in.
Bluegrass is coming back. Maybe the organs are coming back. I think I saw a news article a few weeks ago. It talked about how people are searching out old organs that churches are getting rid of, and so they're becoming a kind of big collector's item, and people are interested in them again. So a lot of pragmatic stuff with the musical background that you're doing at Azusa Pacific. How does a guy from Kansas get to Los Angeles? I mean, was that a conscious decision that Azusa Pacific is the place for me, or what led you there?
Sure. No, it actually kind of happened in stages. My family moved to Portland, Oregon, actually, when I was in high school. So that got me to the West Coast. And then through that, I just kind of got to know some of the more well-known Christian schools and colleges on the West Coast, and I knew by the time I was in high school that I wanted to, that I felt God calling me into some form of ministry, and music had always been a passion, and so I just kind of naturally connected to those things and did a couple campus visits on some different school campuses, and got a chance to visit Azusa when I was a junior in high school. And really, I think the moment for me was I heard they have the university choir and orchestra, which is a group I actually ended up being a part of, met my wife in that group actually. I got to hear them perform at this visit I went to, and man, it was just an incredible worship experience. Just the energy and the passion that group had, at the same time, done in a very musically excellent way. Just the musicianship and the way that they had obviously spent a good amount of time, emphasizing the importance of making sure it was quality as well. And those things were important for me as I was looking for a place to go to school. And so that kind of clinched it for me. And it was really my top choice and my only choice. And that's where I ended up going.
Oh, that's good. Did they have a country music track there?
Man, you keep going back to that.
I'm gonna harp on that theme, and that and the color of the carpet.
You're gonna get me eventually.
So after Azusa Pacific, did you do any additional training beyond that, or
not really? No, I kind of toyed with the idea of doing some seminary work, and I did take a few classes from seminary, with growing family and the different time demands and financial demands on that, and just you know, all the other things that just kind of naturally happen in life, it was one of those things where it just didn't end up really working out. Someday, maybe, we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, I got some valuable stuff out of the few classes that I did take, but for now, yeah, just the...
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, and just a reflection on your time at Azusa Pacific, because you're in a ministry, church ministry or church music ministry program, and so it has a sense of seminary feel to it. It's not the seminary we think of where you go away and you're cloistered, but, you know, you're in a college environment, a lot of other stuff going on here. How much of what you learned during that time do you feel was practical for your position right now at Redemption Church?
It was definitely, I mean, I look back on the things I learned and the experiences I had in college quite a bit, actually. I mean, it was very valuable, specifically to what I do. And I didn't mention before, but a big part of the church music track that I did, well, I should back up. In addition to being a music major at Azusa, I mean, everyone who goes there takes a certain core requirement of Christian Bible classes and theology classes, church history classes, that kind of thing. So you really get a basic understanding of how to study the Bible, how to apply it, that kind of thing. But I did also minor in religion, so I took a few other classes above and beyond kind of the minimum requirements. So just because I knew I was going down the pastoral track and that was the direction I was going. But going back to the music ministry stuff, one of the things I didn't mention besides the practical is the just kind of the philosophy of worship. That was a lot of why do we worship? How do we worship the way we do? What's important in how we worship? Those kinds of things. A lot of the stuff a lot of the time I spent investing in those types of courses and that type of learning, that has really benefited me now, you know, as I'm kind of in the middle of it and all that.
I'm sure that a lot of people at Azusa Pacific love to hear that, and we'll give them a ring too to tell you that you are on this podcast. But, you know, if I ever went back, I went to college at Marquette University as an undergraduate, and I went back and said, hey, my philosophy classes were really useful today. They would jump for joy. I just, you know, philosophy classes, I don't know. I haven't put them to too much use lately, but it's good to see that you did the philosophy of worship working in there. Now, here's the next question. So you do your time at Azusa Pacific. Oh, and by the way, does Azusa Pacific have a football team?
They do.
They do. Mm-hmm. How are they doing? Are they going to a bowl?
I'm going to be pretty ignorant in my answer. Actually don't know.
You don't know?
I do know that they were just approved or accepted into the NCAA, I think Division II, I believe. And so I think that'll kind of take place over the next year or two.
And what was the nickname?
The mascot or the?
Yeah, the mascot.
They're the Cougars.
The Cougars. Oh, yeah. See, I'm from the University of Washington. We're the Dogs. We don't like Cougars
too
much.
Yeah, that doesn't set too well with you.
And I had to bring this up because in about a week or so, University of Washington is going to play Baylor in the Alamo Bowl, and I have very mixed feelings about this because I am working at the University of Washington, but Baylor sponsors this program. I'm just going to look at it as a no-lose situation, so win-win for me there. So after college, here I'm going to put you at that moment in time when you graduate. You got the cap and gown on. You maybe toss the cap up in the air, and you go, what am I going to do with a music ministry degree? How did you get from Azusa Pacific to Duval, Washington?
Duval, Washington. Well, the short answer is I followed a girl, actually. No, it's pretty funny how it all worked out. So I graduated, and my wife, who we were dating at the time we graduated, and she moved up here. Her parents live here in Woodinville, and they had just started attending Duval Church. And after graduation, I moved home to Portland to kind of use that as home base as I kind of looked for work from there. And anyway, so just the way it worked out, my wife Michelle, her parents had like I said, just started going to the church here, and they, in conversation with the pastor, found out that the church was kind of looking for someone to be the worship leader and handle that side of things. And so anyway, they put me in touch with him, and I guess the rest is history.
Yeah. you were very helpful, too, in the early stages of this podcast, and I have to mention that and thank you very much, because you taught me a little bit about the audio editing and helped out with getting CDs prepared and for handing out to folks and things. So that worked out great. Now, I want to fast forward a little bit And we had the discussion or the podcast with Matt Boswell, the pastor of Redemption Church here, who a couple months ago basically is out starting a church from scratch. And I guess take me to that moment where you were, this was no money, no building, no place to be at. You just, you know, recently a few years out from, you know, finding a job, trying to find a job as a music pastor or whatever you could find. Scary moment?
Gosh, certainly. I mean, I think there was definitely a kind of a gut check moment, you know, through it all. But really, man, and you went through a lot of this with Matt, I know. The way it all went down was, it was just kind of, looking back on it now, it was kind of like, really, did we do all that? Just the way everything went that first week, it was just remarkable how smooth it really did go. And I give Matt a hard time. I was like, yeah, it's easy for you to just say we're going to start a new church, because all you got to do is stand up in front of people and talk. You don't have to worry about things like a sound system and all these equipment details. And I joke with them about that, but
and acoustics too, because again, you know, for of those first 6 or 7 days of the church, for about 4 or 5 of those, you didn't know where you were going to be.
Yeah. It was kind of one of those things, like, okay, now what? And we'll just kind of see where God leads us. But no, we were super, super blessed, super fortunate. You know, we've got some great people in our church who have just really stepped up and let us borrow things and you know, let us, you know, just use them pretty much every week for the last couple of months. They've just been so faithful in serving and being really gracious with their time and the different things. And so, you know, we're working on kind of acquiring our own equipment now. And as time goes by, we'll build up our own kind of resources and things that we'll use in that way. But yeah, God's really blessed us with a pretty deep pool of people with a lot of talent, a lot of resources. And so that's been pretty cool.
Yeah. So that takes us to Redemption Church and takes us to the official duties of a music minister, a music pastor. And do you have, first of all, do you have an official title, or are you just like the guy with the guitar?
You know, I think my official title, it's really kind of changed over the years. But at Redemption Church, I think I just go by pastor or elder at this point, because really, Matt mentioned in a sermon a couple weeks ago that, you know, the pastors that are here on staff, we kind of have our areas where we're uniquely gifted in, or that are our unique areas where we focus on, but really we share a lot of the duties and the roles that kind of just fall into that category of pastor. That's just who we are, what we do. But yeah, so for me, the things I focus primarily on are the music, you know, and all everything that goes with that. So song selection to organizing the different teams.
They'll take me through a week of this.
Okay,
because
sure.
This is what I'm a kind of a nuts and bolts guy, and the more that I've progressed in academia, I'm getting away from theory just to ask these little practical questions of how do you do that? And I'm sitting again in the audience on a Sunday listening to the music and thinking, okay, how did we get to this Sunday? How were the songs chosen? What, you know, what did Ryan do when he woke up Monday morning? What does it look like until Sunday? So start us off. Monday morning, sure. You wake up. What goes on?
Sure. Well, and as part of this is going to bounce back a little bit to some of the other things I'm responsible for. But a good chunk of Monday is spent, because one of the things I do is handle the editing and the publishing of the sermon videos from Sunday morning, because we publish all of the sermons online and make those available through different podcasts and our website. And so that kind of falls to me. So Monday, a good chunk of the day is spent editing and rendering and publishing video content, that kind of thing. But I'm also, you know, Monday is a great day because it's the farthest day away from Sunday, mm-hmm. in a certain sense. A lot of pastors like to take Monday off. It's actually one of my most productive days because I don't quite yet feel the pressure of having to have everything prepared for Sunday yet, so I'm kind of freed up to think about some other things. But at the same time, it's just a great day to just kind of debrief from what happened yesterday and kind of look forward at the same time. But so yeah, a lot of video editing and stuff like that happens on Monday. I do start to think about what's going to happen on the upcoming Sunday, going through the notes Matt's given me. Typically, we're going through a series, and so he'll give that to me in advance, so I'll know like what he's going to be preaching on, the topic, the passage, that kind of thing. So I can start looking through some of those verses and the topic and start thinking about it, you know, mm-hmm. just kind of getting the concepts in my head.
Because you want to match the songs to the sermons. I mean, there seems mm-hmm. to be a sense. There's some songs that we always come back to and songs that I really like. Could be more country songs. But, so you're trying to match. You're working with the pastor, the lead pastor, Matt Boswell here, and trying to get things in your mind, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, just kind of getting on my radar, who's on the schedule for that week. Who's going to be playing on the team, who's on. And I'll send out like a notification to all the different volunteers on the production side. I oversee our ushers too that manage the seating on Sunday mornings. And basically just kind of making sure I've got everyone scheduled that needs to be and communicating to them any reminders I need to, that kind of thing. So a lot of that happens on Monday.
Now, you mentioned a rotating crew, and this is interesting because there are some people that I see consistently up there. You're up there every Sunday. Occasionally you have a vacation, so you're not there, but you're up there pretty much every Sunday, and you got people I see regularly, but not all the time. People are going to rotate in and out, and I'm going through my mind, it's like, oh, I haven't seen that drummer yet. They must have had to come in and practice. So how do you manage that?
Mm-hmm. You know, every church is a little bit different in how they do it. And, you know, some churches have just one band that's up there every single week. Some churches have different bands with a different leader, you know, and there's a team. Some churches, which is maybe a little bit more like how we do it, they have kind of one leader, and then he has different teams of volunteers that kind of rotate. And really, a lot of it is dependent on who we have, you know, who's in the church that I'm aware of that plays. And like, so for example, for the last 2 months, 3 months about, we've just had one drummer. And so I mean, he's a high school kid and he's fantastic. He's just given 120%.
He was really good. Actually, the last Sunday, because I used to play the drums, and so that's something that
that's dangerous info for me to know.
Oh, right there, no, I wasn't very talented. The reason I played the drums is because I wanted to do something musical, but you didn't have to read notes. You just had to hit things. But he was really spectacular. And again, one of the things I've noted, too, in over the past couple of years is that all the drummers tend to be young.
You know, that is kind of true. It's funny, actually, and I have no explanation or reason for that. It's just kind of the way it's happened. But yeah, like, so he's been our only drummer, so he's been up there every single week, and we've actually got another guy kind of ready to come on board here in the next few weeks. So that'll be nice to have another drummer in the rotation. But pretty much the way I've got it set now is we have enough musicians to have two team. So the people that are on the team are playing every other week, with okay. the exception yeah. of the drummer. And then as far as singers go, I handle that a little bit differently. My wife and I, my wife kind of serves as my kind of my right hand gal. And I kind of use her because she's really the singer out of the duo between the two of us. And it's just super gifted, super talented in that area. But so I kind of use her to oversee the vocal teams. And we've got five or six, I think, singers. In addition to myself and her, and you know, so I kind of rotate them in, you know, so they're singing about every 3-4 weeks or so, something like that.
Now you're plucking people from the congregation as you learn about them. Are there ever any auditions, or is there ever a time somebody comes in and say, "Hey, I'm just learning guitar, I want to play," and you're like, "Oh, you know, maybe you need to go practice some more and then come back to us." I mean, are there those times?
Yeah, oh, certainly. I mean, I haven't had to come up with against very many of those specific times here in my time here, but we do try to have a process where I don't find myself stuck with just plugging someone in right away and then having to be in the situation of having to say, oh, sorry, this isn't really working out. But I have an application. So if someone approaches me and says, hey, I want to play on the team, I play whatever, or I sing, well, that's great. You know, so I give them the application and fill this out. And that just kind of gives me some background information about them, their musical background, their spiritual background, kind of where they're at in their relationship with Jesus, their relationship to the church. Because what I do care about is, you know, that someone's wanting to be involved in the worship ministry as a ministry, right? It's not they're looking for a place to showcase their talent. It's not a gig, you know, they just show up on Sundays and play. But it's people who are in the church, who are connected to the church. And that's not to say they have to be the most spiritually mature person at all, but, you know, someone that, you know, this is a church, this is where they call home, this is how they want to serve the body, right? And so that's one of the things I'm looking for. And then, you know, from there, I usually try to get together with them one-on-one and hear them play or just talk about anything that came out of the application, just to get to know them a little bit more. And then if I feel, you know, musically they're at a point where it would be a good idea to have him start playing with the team. I'll have him start coming to practices for a few times, you know, just kind of see
how. How often do you practice during the week?
We practice once a week right now. We practice on Thursday nights, and it works for the most part. I mean, there are times where we're limited by, you know, because they're volunteers, right? I mean, so I'm getting people who are coming straight from work, coming to practice, you know, and so I'm asking them to be there for a couple hours.
Yeah, drummer's a, you know, teenage high school kid.
Exactly.
He's got this, that, and that going on.
Loads of homework at home, exactly. So, you know, so working around volunteer schedules is certainly tricky sometimes, but I mean, gosh, the people that we have here are just super faithful, and it's been great working with them. But yeah, once a week is generally enough time. Now there's times where, like, we're rolling out a new song or something, in the past, kind of depending on the space we have and the availability we have, that kind of thing, I'll schedule like an extra rehearsal, like on a Saturday or something. Or if we're doing like a special service or we're doing more music than normal or something like that, I might do something extra. But typically we just do, once a week, Thursday nights.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the questions I want to ask, and it comes up with me because at the beginning of this podcast, we have music that fades in and then we have music that fades out. The song title is Bright Sky, and if you're interested in who does it, you can visit our website, look at the About section to find out. So you have to do a little homework. It's one of my favorite songs, actually, but we had to go through a process of getting copyrights. And I've always wondered how this works in a church, that you got music that is written by different artists, and you know, some of them are old hymns, they fall into the public domain, you know, Amazing Grace or something like that, but our church does a lot of more contemporary music. You'll see Chris Tomlin songs or a few other songs that are in there. How do you manage the issue of copyright? Is it a big hassle? Is it what do you do?
You know, actually, that's a great question, and there are a couple services out there that have made it really easy for churches to make sure they're in compliance. We have a license through an organization called Christian Copyright Licensing International, I think, and they're kind of a blanket organization, and so we just pay a yearly license to them, and pretty much, I mean, as far as I know, every song that we do here is covered under that license, and you can always go into their database and look up, you know, any particular song we're doing. But so if it's not public domain, like a hymn or something like that, then it's covered by that kind of blanket license.
Now, you mentioned before that the sermons, they go online and you make CDs for people who don't want to download them. Are you allowed to put some of those musical songs on those, on that outlet, on the out? I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah, we don't typically record or publish the music we do on Sunday mornings. There are licenses available for that. A lot of churches these days are streaming their services live online, that kind of thing. And you know, we haven't gone down that route. But if we were to, because we've thrown on the idea before of like making a CD of, you know, some of the songs we'd like to do here on a regular basis, just to be able to give to people or make available, we would have to go through individual. I believe we'd have to go through obtaining the copyright permissions from each of the individual song authors or publishers if we were to do something like that. But.
Okay, so you're playing the songs in your head. You're talking with the lead pastor. You're thinking about practice times and getting everybody organized. So a lot of this stuff is musical stuff. But you mentioned earlier that you're a pastor elder. You're not just the music guy. You do a bunch of other stuff. So what other kind of things do you do?
Mm-hmm. Some of the other things that fall to me are all of our, a good chunk of our communication stuff. So that everything that kind of falls under that heading would be the website, all our online presence, so Facebook, any, you know, the podcast we publish, that kind of thing, as well as I'm responsible for our weekly email newsletter that goes out and so the content that goes into that, the Sunday morning handout that we give to people, I publish that, as well as a lot of our graphic design, that kind of thing. We actually are pretty blessed as a church. We have a number of really talented designers, but who have a lot more training and experience in that than me. So a lot of times I'll defer to them, but you know, sometimes I'll get tasked with, hey, can you make a logo for this, or can you create a slide for this, that kind of thing.
I'd say pulling from the community in many ways, and the talents that everybody has, because a lot of the content that we have in our church is pretty nifty. I mean, last week we had this video I don't know if it's a PowerPoint thing or a video, but it moved a lot, and it talked about the Christmas season and, you know, really thinking about what is important there. And there was a lot of movement on that. Did you make that? Did somebody in the church make that? Or did you get some content offline where, you know, I don't know if there's content servers that allow churches to say, hey, if you're looking for something for this week's sermon or service here, you can pull this idea down.
Mm-hmm. We do a mixture. Now, that particular video was not created in-house. That one was one we bought. And there are a number of media content producers that design specifically for churches. You know, there's tons of websites and places you can go that they're producers, and that's what they do, is they make videos and images, you know, still images, just different types of content for churches to use in their multimedia. And so we kind of do a mixture of both. We design some of our stuff in-house. We like a lot of the, I would say, 90%, maybe even 100% of the intro videos that you see a lot of times, but in front of the sermons, yeah, that kind of, you know, introduce the message for the day. We do all that in-house just because it's customized to the message.
Yeah.
And that all comes out of Matt's head pretty much, you know, what he's preaching on, that kind of thing. And so we'll customize the look and the feel of the series that he's going to be doing. But, you know, some of the other stuff, the call to worship type videos like that one or just some of the other ones, the quality of the stuff that's being put out these days is, you know, it's, I could spend 12 hours producing something of my own that may or may not be as good as something that I could pay $15 for and call it good.
That's a really interesting observation. You think about the internet technology and how it's lowered information costs for a lot of individuals. And in many ways, and we might be at the outset of this, it's reshaping the way Christian churches operate. That, you know, in the past, you relied upon the denominational hymnal, and, you know, the denomination provided you with, okay, this is the kind of sermon series we're doing today. But now it's a lot of it's just out there. Some of it's free content. Some of it, you know, is $15 to purchase it. Some of it is probably much more expensive. But it really does allow pastors such as yourself to, you know, to pick and choose and put different ideas together, which is kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So that's all the stuff you're doing during the week. Now, here's the emotional aspect of music. And this is, being a social scientist, I often don't deal with the emotional aspects of this stuff. But, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, but tell me what it's like to be in front of the crowd on a regular basis. And I want to know, too, if the venue makes a difference, because previously you were in a rather large warehouse/gym type of building where the chairs were flat and we had two services. And although the congregation filled in, I mean, we get 400, 500 people on a regular basis, it was a pretty big space, and the pews, which were actually chairs, didn't fill up all the time. So there would be gaps there. Now, your current gig in our church is meeting in a high school auditorium, and it's like a movie theater, so the seats slant up so the people behind can see over your head and over my cowboy hat. And the room is usually packed. Have you noticed the difference? Have you felt the difference between those two venues, and what's it like being up there?
Absolutely. Yeah, the venue totally makes a difference. And it's funny too, just the energy that's in, you know, in the house when it's packed is inspiring, you know, as opposed to being in such a large room where it's maybe not totally filled up. It can be a lot more difficult to try to feel like I'm engaging people or getting people into the experience. But I don't know if it's the acoustics in the room or what, but just the hearing people sing in where we're at right now, as opposed to how it was before, has just been huge. I kind of had a funny story the other day. On Sunday, actually, I was leading and I sang a wrong lyric, but I didn't realize I'd sung it wrong until I sung it, and the voices of the congregation singing were so loud, it was like as loud as the sound coming out of my monitor. And so it was like, wait a second, that was not right, because they all sang something different than what I just sang, and that would have probably never happened before at the old place. I could just hear the singing so much more now, and you know, that inspires us as a band on stage, I think, to bring it a little bit more maybe than, you know, when you feel like you're playing, you're giving everything you got, and there's no response, right? That can be kind of demoralizing. But also even just the way the lighting is too makes a difference too. Because I know back when we were at Duval, the lights would be pretty much shining right on us, mm-hmm. and we would really kill all the house lights because we didn't have a lot of control, so they were kind of either on or off. So we would leave them off during the music, and it was like looking into pitch black. I mean, you couldn't even mm-hmm. see what was going on. And in this environment, I don't know if it's just the angle of the chairs or just the lighting is better or what, but I can actually see people as they're worshiping. And as a leader, that actually makes a difference. I mean, in addition to being able to hear people sing and kind of respond in that way, actually being able to, when I'm not closing my eyes, right, looking out and seeing you know, people's faces and there's just an element of being able to at least feel like I can lead better, you know, and engage at a different level when I can actually see the people I'm leading.
Yeah, it makes a big difference too, because at our old place, there would be times that, you know, people would be separated. And there would be big gaps between people. And actually, people like myself, you know, searched out those places because I like my space. You
sure.
know, I want yeah. my place to put my hat down and my coat. And it didn't seem to create as much energy, even though, you know, roughly the same number of people were attending. Now we have one service, and so it is compressing the number of people. So there might be a few more people there. But, you know, I'm thinking that the music is sounding louder. I don't know if it's the acoustics of the room, or if it's the congregation is more enthused or what, or just being more packedly tight. The other thing I noticed a lot more is what I call the hallelujah hands. I mean, there's a lot more of those coming up. And as you said, at the old place, you couldn't see the audience very much. But, you know, occasionally one or two people would have put up their hands while they're singing. But, I mean, there's a lot of folks that are now throwing up their hands, and including myself and my wife. And so that kind of venue, it plays off a lot of with one another.
Yeah, it's been really cool to see. Yeah, and I agree with you. I don't know how much of that's the venue, or how much of it's just God's Spirit doing something cool in our church right now. You know, just given kind of the situation we find ourselves in as a new church, and really relying on God in some different ways than we have before. And I don't know if that's kind of being reflected in how people worship. But yeah, it's definitely been, there's been something cool going on.
And you wouldn't believe how cool it would be if you put a little twang, maybe slide guitar in there, countrify it a little bit, you know, I don't know.
Every I'm hand just, in the crowd would be up, man.
Okay, I know, yeah, I know. I actually am making a suggestion, but there you go. So with the few more minutes that we have here, I just want you to kind of reflect on that and give us your funniest moment. Is there anything that sticks out in your mind that just says, whoa, that was totally goofy? I know the first service that we had in the high school auditorium, nobody remembered to weight down the drum set. And as the guy was doing it, the drums kept moving forward on the stage until somebody came by with a big, huge sandbag.
Yeah, I came and rescued the poor guy. Yeah, no, that was one of those things that I realized after the fact. Oh, man, we've had some funny moments. I mean, just even in cues I've missed, you know, or rehearse something a bunch of times, and then I'm the one that mess it up and throw the whole band off. And I don't know if I have a funniest moment. I remember there a few months ago, we were starting a song, and my poor wife, we counted the song off, and it was one that was, you know, kind of a more faster upbeat song, and we start right off with singing a line, and I forgot to sing, and so she jumps in on her harmony part, you know, really belts it out, and realizes that I'm not singing, so she backs off the mic. Anyway, the whole thing, we managed to pull it together somehow, but it was pretty funny in the moment. You just kind of had to laugh at it and move on.
I oftentimes wonder about that, because we don't have hymnals. The music shows up on the screen behind you guys, and the lyrics will be up there, and sometimes you're singing the words that are not on the screen, and I sit there, scratch my head, I always thought it was the guy running the PowerPoint.
Yeah, go ahead and blame him.
Blame him, whether than no, it's the guy singing.
But in trouble here.
The neat thing is that everybody keeps going. I mean, that's not a big deal. In fact, it's almost an endearing part of the services that there will always be some point that the lyrics are up there, and you're like, oh, okay. But everybody knows the song anyway, so we keep.
Yeah, no, I would say if there's ever a wrong lyric song, blame it on this guy, because it's either I'm not looking at my music, or I just space out or something. But.
How about your most inspirational moment? You've had several years here in the Snoqualmie Valley, and you know, also in college. And is there anything that really sticks out that, you know, just, wow, I'm really doing this. This is making a big difference. This is inspiring.
That's a good question. You know, there's definitely moments where you'll get a comment from someone, or you'll have a realization that, you know, there's times where, you know, I'll come out of a Sunday and think, man, that was a rough set. You know, that didn't go as well as I'd planned or whatever. And someone come up to me afterwards and just really thank me and say, man, you know, the worship was powerful or whatever. And they, you know, really got something out of it. It's like, wow, that was obviously God then, because it wasn't me. I think just at least in recent memory, probably the most inspirational time for me personally was the Sunday before we kicked off Redemption, actually, where we kind of went into that day not knowing exactly what was going to happen, letting people know, hey, we're starting something new, and we don't know what's going to look like, and a lot of question marks, right? And again, just kind of that gut check feeling of what's going to happen. We went into that, you know, not knowing what we were going to do, but went into that day of worship, and there was some other stuff too. Like, I think our drummer got sick that day, so he wasn't able to show up. So it was kind of all these different things, and just due to the nature of it, we'd changed the setup last minute, so we hadn't even really rehearsed. But people sang on that day, and people responded on that day like they never had before, you know, in my 5 years of being with this congregation, this, you know, this body of believers. And that was pretty inspirational to me. Just seeing the unity that was expressed there and just the faith in God through the worship, that was pretty powerful to be part of that.
I think that wraps around with what we were talking about at the beginning of the podcast here, is just how music does serve as that central unifying thing. It's not just the pastor giving the sermon and we're absorbing it, but everybody is part of this. The congregation is really part of the whole, and it really lifts the worship service above and beyond just the number of people who are there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's great. I just finish off, and we're going to have you play a song here in a second, but do you have any advice reflecting upon your 5 years with this congregation, your time in college and the music ministry, that we have some students who are listening here, we have some homeschoolers, they might be thinking, what, should I go down this path? And you're, you know, fairly young into your professional career here. What kind of advice would you give those folks?
What kind of advice would I give? If it's something you feel God calling you to do, explore it, you know, and find ways that you can be in contexts where you get the chance to lead, because really to develop as a leader, I mean, I think there's a certain element where God gifts that those unique abilities and just the things that go along with being a worship leader. I think some of that is just given by God, right? But I think that a lot of it is developed and learned over time. I mean, I'm certainly a better worship leader now than I was 10 years ago when I was doing it in high school and that kind of thing. So, there's definitely through the experiences I've had, that kind of thing. So I would say seek out as many opportunities as you can to hone your craft, you know, and develop the skills that God's given you. Musically, be just surrounding yourselves with all kinds of musical influences and trying to develop creativity that way. Everything but country music, really. That would be the only thing. But don't be afraid to be diverse in where you're getting your influences from, that kind of thing. Those are just a couple things.
Well, that's great. And so I think now we're going to turn to a song that you have written, that you've composed yourself. And I just want to mention this, because if there's some folks there listening in the music ministry, we love our music minister out here. We love Ryan Habig. He's a great guy. But if somebody out there wants to give him a big break or something like that, you certainly can take care of that and contact the church. But also remember that he's our guy, too. So we want to kind of keep him around here. But so what song are you going to do for us?
Did you want a Christmas song, or what were you hoping for here?
Well, one of your own songs, because this is on the World Wide Web, and it'll be heard all year long. We are coming up to Christmas, so let's go ahead and do one of your songs. What, you got a name for this?
We'll do this one. This one's called With Us, and it was one I kind of co-wrote with my wife, actually.
Can I ask, what was the inspiration for that, the song With Us?
Mm-hmm. I was going through, it's actually taken from... There's a passage in Amos, actually, and it's the passage is a hymn, and this is very loose. You're going to go to Amos and try to find where this text comes from. And you're like, I don't see it. It's very loosely connected to. But there's actually a hymn embedded in the book, and I was going through it, and that's kind of what inspired this first verse, where it talks about. I'll just read the lyrics: "Mysterious, holy God, who can comprehend your ways? You formed the mountains, breathed the wind, and reveal yourself to us." And then the second verse, you place the stars upon the sky, you turn the darkness into day. The God who makes the sun to set, create your light in us. And kind of where I was coming from in this was, you know, the verses really kind of talk about the bigness of God, the transcendence of God. And then the pre-chorus goes into talking about God being our Emmanuel and how we can have that intimacy with him and be joined with him in worship. And so kind of the combining the, you know, and then the chorus goes into basically our response to that. So it's the bigness of God, the transcendence of God, and then yet the profound reality that he makes himself available to us as Emmanuel, and then our response to that.
All right, let's hear it. I feel like a DJ announcer now. That was Ryan Habig with us. And hey, folks, we got an audience here from some of the staff. That's some of the kids here working at the church offices. What do you think? We ask for an encore. Maybe do something Christmassy. What do you think? Awesome. You guys all want to sing along? All right, let's give us a minute to set that song up, and then we'll be right back here on Research on Religion. Okay, then now is another special encore here. We have Ryan with a bunch of the folks from Redemption Church singing "O Come All Ye Faithful" for the Christmas season. Take it away.
All right, here we go.
happy morning, Jesus, to thee be all glory again. Word of the Father, now in flesh appearing, oh come let us adore him, oh come let us adore him, oh come let us adore.
And so, Ryan, I want to thank you for being on Research on Religion today.
And, thank you, Tony.
And all the guys and gals here at Redemption Church. Yay!
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.